This content is AI-generated for informational purposes only and should not be directly used for clinical decision-making.
Hello, and welcome back to the Neurosurgery Hub podcast. I'm Dr. Aris, Senior Attending Neurosurgeon.
And I'm Dr. Alara, Research Fellow. Today, we're looking at a fascinating new study from the journal Epilepsia Open, published in 2026. It asks a provocative question that we deal with in multidisciplinary team meetings every week. Does having bad epilepsy make you a good surgical candidate?
It's a title that really hits home, Alara. We've all been in that room where a patient has failed every medication, their seizures are frequent and violent, and even though the MRI is negative or the focus is ill-defined, someone says, "We have to do something. This surgery could be life-saving because their risk of SUDEP, sudden unexpected death in epilepsy, is so high."
Exactly. It's what the authors Sally Baxtendale and her colleagues call the end-of-the-road justification. We often offer surgery to individuals with a low probability of seizure freedom, sometimes as low as 20 to 30%, framed as a life-saving intervention. This paper actually puts those numbers to the test, using a number needed to treat, or NNT, analysis.
Before we get into the mortality math, let's ground ourselves in what a good candidate actually looks like according to the paper summary. We know the strongest predictor of ILA class 1 outcomes, complete seizure freedom, is a well-defined lesion on MRI, like mesiotemporal sclerosis or low-grade tumors. Those patients have a 70 to 80% success rate.
Right, and the paper contrasts that with poor candidates, those with nonspecific gliosis, discordant presurgical data, or extratemporal resections, particularly in the frontal lobe, where success rates drop to 30 to 50%. The study focuses on this specific tension. If the patient is a poor candidate for seizure freedom, does the high risk of their bad epilepsy still justify the surgery as a life-saving measure?
So how did they calculate this? NNT is usually used for drug trials, not often for surgical mortality.
They used published mortality rates, deaths per 1,000 person years, comparing unoperated drug-resistant epilepsy, postoperative seizure-free patients, and postoperative patients who were not seizure-free. They then calculated the absolute risk reduction, or ARR, and the NNT to prevent one all-cause death or one SUDEP.
And they modeled this across different probabilities of success, right?
Exactly. Let's look at the annualized data first. If we assume a 50% probability of a patient achieving seizure freedom, the NNT to prevent one all-cause death is 146 person years. To prevent one SUDEP, it's 243 person years.
146 person years. For our residents listening, that means you'd have to follow that patient for nearly 150 years to see that one life saved, or follow 150 similar patients for 1 year. What happens when the odds of seizure freedom drop to that 20% mark we often see in salvage cases?
The numbers get much tougher. At a 20% probability of seizure freedom, the NNT to prevent one all-cause death worsens to 178 person years. For SUDEP, it climbs to 264 person years. Conversely, if you have an 80% chance of success, your classic MTS case, the NNT improves to 124 for all-cause mortality and 225 for SUDEP.
This highlights a crucial point the authors make. The mortality benefit is heavily weighted towards those who actually achieve seizure freedom. If the surgery fails to stop the seizures, the mortality reduction is described as modest at best.
And there's a darker side to that data. The paper mentions that surgery might even increase mortality risk if generalized seizures continue after the operation. This creates a paradox. The patients with the highest mortality risk, those with frequent secondarily generalized tonic-clonic seizures, are often the same ones least likely to achieve postoperative seizure freedom.
So the life-saving rationale is being applied most often to the group least likely to realize the benefit. That's a sobering thought for our surgical planning. But the paper didn't just look at annualized risk. They looked at lifetime modeling, which I think is more relevant for our pediatric and young adult patients.
This is where the numbers start to look much more surgical. When you look at postoperative life expectancy, the NNT decreases sharply. If a patient has 60 years of life expectancy ahead of them, the NNT to prevent one all-cause death drops to just 3.5. For SUDEP, it's 4.7.
Now that is a compelling number. If I can tell a family that the NNT is under 5 over the course of the patient's life, that feels like a powerful intervention. But again, that assumes a high probability of seizure freedom.
Precisely. The authors are pushing us to move away from "we must do something" thinking. They point out two specific cognitive biases that cloud our judgment in these end-of-the-road cases: action bias and optimism bias.
Action bias is a big one in neurosurgery. It's the tendency to favor intervention over inaction, especially in high-stakes situations.
we feel better doing a resection than watching a patient continue to have clusters of seizures, even if the data says our chance of success is slim.
And optimism bias leads us to believe that our patient will be the one who beats the odds, the 20% chance that somehow becomes 100% reality in our minds. But as the study shows, if the patient doesn't achieve seizure freedom, they remain at that elevated mortality risk.
It's also worth noting the factors they listed that correlate with ILA Class 1 outcomes, things like shorter duration of epilepsy, less than 10 years, and the absence of generalized seizures. It seems the life-saving benefit is much easier to achieve if we intervene earlier, rather than waiting until it's an end-of-the-road scenario.
That's a key takeaway. The mortality benefit is greatest when the probability of seizure freedom is high and the remaining life expectancy is long. Using the life-saving rationale to justify surgery in a 50-year-old with non-lesional multifocal epilepsy and a 20% chance of success is statistically much harder to defend than doing it for a 15-year-old with a clear focal lesion.
The authors use a very specific phrase. The life-saving rationale often targets those least likely to achieve seizure freedom. It's a call for balanced, data-driven risk-benefit discussions. We shouldn't use mortality as a trump card to bypass the low statistical likelihood of a good seizure outcome.
So for the residents and surgeons listening, how do we apply this in the clinic tomorrow?
I think it means being much more transparent with the NNT. Instead of saying surgery will reduce your risk of death, we should say, based on your 30% chance of seizure freedom, the statistical likelihood of this surgery extending your life only becomes significant over a 30 or 40 year period, and only if we are successful in stopping the seizures. It changes the life-saving narrative into a long-term risk management narrative.
And it reinforces that surgery for bad epilepsy isn't a silver bullet. If the neuropathological or electrophysiological markers suggest diffuse brain dysfunction, what the paper calls biomarkers for more diffuse brain dysfunction, the mortality benefit remains elusive.
It's a fascinating study. It forces us to look at the math behind our surgical intuition. Does having bad epilepsy make you a good surgical candidate? Only if that surgery has a high probability of making the epilepsy go away entirely.
Well put. That covers the core findings of Baxtendale and colleagues' NNT analysis. It's a vital piece of work for anyone involved in epilepsy surgery counseling.
Thank you, Dr. Ilara. And thank you all for listening to the Neurosurgery Hub podcast. We'll see you in the next episode.
Goodbye, everyone.